Hey, it's Corporate Lunch Episode 9. I'm GQ Style Editor-in-Chief Will Welch, and I'm here with Noah Johnson.
Hello, what up?
GQ Style Senior Editor.
Welcome back.
I believe we are going to talk about magazine making in modern times, modern magazine making in digital times. Is that accurate?
That's what sounds about right. Something we know a little bit about, you know a lot about, I know a little bit about. This is a big week here at GQ Style. This week we are rolling out our holiday issue cover and cover story.
We're a quarterly magazine. This is the fourth issue of the year.
That's right. And it's a banger. It's a really special one. ASAP Rocky's on the cover.
He is. I think we've had a good quad this year, man. We had Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt in the national parks.
Wow.
A comic actor named Aziz Ansari.
Mm-hmm.
And now Rakim Myers, a.k.a. ASAP Rocky.
That is a hell of a lineup.
It's a pretty good squad.
Four modern men who are complex and interesting and do something with style that is worth noticing.
Yeah.
Make statements.
I would put our print squad up against anybody's website any day.
So, speaking of, I want to take you to task today, Will, as editor-in-chief of GQ Style, and get deep into your headspace, and talk about what goes into making a magazine, and particularly, the cover story and the cover feature, because that's kind of like, it's still, we live in an era of, multi-platform. We are not limited by any one medium. We do it all, but print remains a unique thing, I think, because it has a cover.
Yeah, definitely.
And
it's physical. It exists physically, and people still care about that.
And that cover, by nature of its physical form, sits somewhere and is just the first thing people see.
Yeah,
it's how people identify it. And there's no getting around that. You can't, link someone physically into the magazine directly. They will always be linked to the cover first.
Yeah, and there have been websites that tried to do, we do cover stories now, and we're going to, give you this whiz-bangy cover, really put you forward for a period of time. And it's like the cover of our website. But the truth is that only magazines have covers. Websites do things magazines can't do, and vice versa.
Yeah.
And so that to me has never worked, although it's interesting.
So we do four covers a year, which is awesome and is also a little different than magazines that do 12 or 24 or whatever. What does that spot represent to you? This is the big general starter question, but we look at the year ahead. We're looking at 2018 and thinking about the covers and who should be on the covers. Is it just who are the hottest celebrity dudes on the planet going to be at that time? Or what does it represent as a an idea?
Well, there's a little bit of that, but you also want your cover star to embody in some way the sort of ethos of the magazine.
Yeah.
And that's what we've been shooting for from day one. So it's been Robert Downey Jr., Jared Leto, Kendrick Lamar, and then the four guys. That was 2016, and then 2017 was the four guys I just mentioned. And each of them, I once made a joke before the first issue came out that GQ Style cover stars were going to be rapscallions, assholes, and I can't remember the exact line, but the idea is a little bit of bad attitude is a-okay with us.
Yeah.
A little bit of a rebel spirit, and I think that's been represented on the seven covers we've done so far.
Yeah.
And then there has to be, the term we use for ASAP Rocky is flyness.
Yeah.
The world's flyest human.
That's what it says.
Is what the cover says.
Yeah.
And I actually, after writing that cover line, did the thought exercise, is this defensible? Do I actually believe this or not?
Yeah.
And went through it, and I absolutely believe it.
You couldn't
figure Rocky
out.
Right now. And flyness is different from the world's flyest human is different from the world's most stylish man.
Yeah, of course.
It's it's a different attitude. And I think there's a reason that the word fly, which definitely comes straight from Mobolaji Dawodu.
Yeah.
I mean, it was one of the first. It's just a word he uses all the time, and he says it in a particular way, and it captures something really specific. And I think that's what the magazine has been after. I mean, really, GQ Style is a magazine about advanced personal style.
Yeah.
It is not a magazine about cool ways to wear shirts, or it's really about somebody who embodies a certain stylishness.
Yeah. It's interesting. Covers also, just thinking about when this cover rolled out, the first time I saw it outside of our office was on Instagram. And you know, immediately, like, the comments pile up, the likes pile up. It's not this, it's different. If we just dropped, like, a photo we took of A$AP Rocky that was exclusive that no one had seen before, that would be one thing. But, like, covers still have, like, real impact, right?
Yeah, it's got juice. I mean, the, you know, the most liked Instagrams we put up are our covers.
Yeah.
And that's pretty amazing given that you can just, like, sort of take any image and put it up. But it still matters to people, and I think it matters to the people that, that follow what we're doing, and matters to just the culture at large, but it also matters to the celebrities themselves. Like, I think that, you know, to get a GQ cover and now also a GQ style cover carries a lot of weight to people, and it's a certain, like, milestone or imprimatur in your career.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think I would be betraying him to say I know that Rocky felt that way.
Yeah. So the cover says the world's fly is human, and then there's a beautiful photo of Rocky, and we'll talk more about the photo and stuff in a second, but what were the, beyond the fact that he's the flyest human on Earth, what were the other things that you thought about when we decided to put Rocky on the cover?
Well, to me, he embodies, we said it, I think, in the cover post that went up on Sunday night, that just that he is the center of the music and fashion Venn diagrams.
Yeah.
Like, for me personally, and I think it's not just a personal thing, it's also a cultural thing, like, a lot of style and music is the source of a lot of style and fashion.
Right.
And so it's definitely, like, something I'm interested in is who from the music world is embodying, like, what style means in late 2017. And Rocky's somebody, it was almost like, I hope this doesn't make it sound inevitable or boring, but Rocky was going to get a GQ style cover.
Yeah.
It was just a matter of time.
Yeah.
And he actually came up to me at a Dior dinner and was like, "Yo, I really fuck with what you're doing at GQ style. Like, the energy is amazing. And, I'd love to work together just whenever, when the time is right." He was like, "I don't have a timetable." And I was like, "I don't really either."
Yeah.
And he was like, "All right, when the time is right, let's do this." And I was like, "Yeah, let's do it."
That might be a thing that's a little unique to us. I don't want to get boring with like publishing strategy stuff, but for a lot of people, like, timing is everything.
Yeah, the peg.
When you do these things, you need that news peg. You need the movie to premiere, the week, the cover drops, and so on. And there's a lot of good, you know, smart reasoning behind that, but maybe not as important to us. Or
yeah, I feel like there's a couple things there. One is, it is absolutely true that the momentum of, like, a big movie release or something is going to, like, help the number of clicks that you get on a cover story, because somebody's just, like, you know, their name is being searched and all that kind of stuff, and it really does matter. But at the same time, it also feels like we're increasingly post-peg as a culture. Like, somebody doing something interesting, it doesn't have to be tied to a project, you know. It could be it could be as silly as an outfit they wore, or a performance that they gave, or a something political that they said somewhere, and all of a sudden they've got all this energy behind them. And what we're really looking for is to document, like, the energy sources.
Yeah.
The other thing I'd say is that we've been really ambitious with the projects that we embark on with people, which is that, like, in that first conversation with Rocky, I was like, cool, but I don't want to do, like, a 4-hour photo shoot in a Los Angeles photo studio and, like, a sit down interview. And he was like, yeah, me either. And that, and, you know, the ultimate example that we've, pulled off so far would be Brad Pitt going to 3 national parks with Ryan McGinley. So we're trying to like use the cover as an excuse to embark on a creative project with these people who kind of have the energy and who we respect, and to do something that is going to be its own peg, essentially.
Right. Like, let the thing itself epitomize or be the reason for it existing.
Yeah. So instead of echoing what's in the news, we're trying to, like, be the news or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, Brad Pitt, like, he had that was kind of like a storm of things. He had a movie that was straight to Netflix. That was the first time that had happened.
Right.
He was obviously going through a divorce,
personal stuff
in his personal life, and then also I think the cover itself was its own thing, and that I think the reason he did it is because we proposed something that was exciting to him.
Yeah, that one was
like having his picture taken, just to have his picture taken is not exciting to him.
Yeah, he's done
that. But the creative project, yeah, exactly.
that one was especially rad, I think, for us to watch, because yes, like, this story got a ton of play because of, like, the juicier stuff about his, you know, his personal life, but I think like a lot of people just responded to the imagery alone.
Yeah.
Which doesn't always happen, and that was pretty epic and something I think that like we continued to do.
And of course Ryan McGinley gets a lot of credit for that.
Yeah. God damn. Worth revisiting. Still live on GQstyle.com somewhere.
Yeah, it's still on the internet. Hasn't come down.
Look at that anytime you want. Rocky.
Can I say something really quick?
Yeah, of course.
I wrote about the editor's letter in the ASAP Rocky issue is about the semi-permanence of magazines and why I think that's really interesting. So there's like newspapers and the internet and like little things that pop up on your iPhone to tell you to read a CNN piece or whatever, an alert.
Yeah, alerts. And then
there are the history books, right? So one is like the daily churn. The other is like meant to be permanent. What's interesting to me about magazines is they're semi-permanent, especially a quarterly magazine like GQ Style.
Yeah.
On the one hand, they only come out 4 times a year. On the other hand, it's printed on really beautiful paper and is $15 a copy and is kind of like, I mean, my dream for these things is that you carry them around and read them and then leave them on your coffee table until the next one comes. And then hopefully, I mean, I don't care if somebody throws it away. I actually say this in the editor's like, if it goes to your recycling bin, like respect, that's part of the game.
It's the cycle of life.
That's the cycle of life. But, you know, if it earns a spot on your shelf, even better. But what I was sort of saying that, like, if all we had is the daily churn and then the permanence of books, like who's going to document the vibes?
Right. Yeah.
And that's what it's really about, is like, it's not about trying to freeze ASAP Rocky as the world's flyest human here, now, and forever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's about this moment. And for us, the moment lasts for 3 months. And that, to me, that semi-permanent aspect is what, to me, is exciting.
I always say that I love working on a quarterly. I had never done that, you know, done this before. Very few people do in, like, American magazine publishing.
Yeah.
And I think that perfectly sums up, like, what it is about it, you know, that there's more to it, that it like it's about capturing or documenting more than just like what's going on in that particular week's cycle or whatever.
It doesn't come and go, but it also doesn't come and stay.
Yeah.
It comes and like hangs out for a minute.
Yeah. So you said Rocky is like, he's the guy, I agree that he's the guy that's sitting at the intersection of music and fashion right now. He's also, just as far as celebrities go, kind of like King of the Hill in the fashion world a little bit, or at least he's among the kings of the hill.
I mean, we talk about this idea of get your own look.
Yeah.
Like, I'm currently, my phone has smoke coming out of it right now because I just posted on our Instagram the photo of him with the Marnie pants cinched up at the waist with the Larry David Balenciagas on.
My favorite look.
Yeah, people are not feeling it. But he doesn't care. He's feeling it. Mobilaji's feeling it.
Yeah.
I'm feeling it. Noah's feeling it. Sam, how do you feel?
Sam's down.
Sam's feeling it. All
definitely right. Feeling it. So one of the funny things is the article reminded me that Rocky's pretty much been out like on the scene as a famous person for only about 6 years.
Yeah.
It seems like it's been longer than that. I don't know if I'm dating myself, but
no,
he's just had so much like impact in so many different ways.
He has.
He's like a household name, and he's like, you know.
Noah and I were trying to talk about, we were trying to figure out like, can you give ASAP Rocky credit for making high fashion like as much a part of hip hop and pop culture as streetwear? Like, yes, you can definitely give him credit, but how much credit? Is he really the dude that did that? I mean, like Kanye, there's always the like Kanye, Jay-Z, Watch the Throne, Givenchy, you know, Riccardo Tisci designed the cover. He did the stage outfits. He did the merch. Okay. But like in a lot of ways, Rocky in those early videos where he was like mixing Black Scale and Hood by Air with Rick Owens, you actually know this stuff better. What was the deal? He was like shopping at Tokyo 7.
I believe that him and like maybe Bari and other people were like going to the consignment shops in the East Village where you could dig through the racks. They're still there. Tokyo 7's the big one. And like you could really like go in there and discover like pretty obscure European and Japanese brands, or at least at the time obscure, like, you know, Yoji Yamamoto or Undercover. And of course, like Rick Owens and Raf Simons, you know, like they had that stuff on the racks there and it was semi affordable, at least more so than it would be like at a boutique when it was new. And it was like past season, so it was like archival stuff, so you could really get to know a designer. And I, from what I understand, those guys were getting schooled in that shit by that experience of going down there and digging around.
I mean, it brings me back to something you brought up on the pod from one of our magazine pieces, which is Diplo saying, like, nobody was wearing fashion at the Holotronics parties. Yeah. And, like, when Rocky was a little, like, snot-nosed kid with a cool crew making awesome videos in, like, his first, you know, peso era,
yeah,
Rocky, I don't think he went to parties and everybody was, like, dipped in Gucci.
Nah.
At that point. Maybe there was a little bit of it, but they really moved that forward.
Yeah, I mean, it went from, like, Dipset to ASAP, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, Dipset and Pele jackets and shit. And
totally.
It was,
like, Joel Santana in the American flag joint.
Yeah.
And Cameron wearing, you know, it wasn't like those were high fashion brands.
Yeah, and, I mean, like, shout out to Dipset. Cameron, friend of the pod and everything, and love all those fits.
Cameron's he's like family of the pod.
But it was a different level, and I think, you know, look, I don't want to make any huge outrageous claims.
We already said the world's flyest human. You can go for it.
No, but I think that you're
still
right. It is
that.
Interesting to think about, like, Givenchy and Margiela and those, and that, like, Jay-Z and Kanye were sort of like touting those brands, Tom Ford. But it just felt, when it was Rick Owens and Raf Simons coming from Rocky's mouth, it felt really different.
And he was a kid.
He was a kid from the
teenager.
Streets. And these were cult brands that, like, only real heads knew. And now they are household names. You know, Rick and Raf are, as is Rocky. And I don't think it's just a coincidence that that's sort of all gone down in the last 6 years.
I don't either. That shit, he was ahead of his time.
So what was it like? You guys went to London to shoot with him, you and Mobolaji.
Yeah.
And Rocky obviously has a taste level and some specific, you know, demands, I'm sure, for what goes on his body. How did you guys collaborate? How did you guys plan out the fashions and work together with him on that?
Yeah, so Mobolaji, the GQ style fashion director who styles every page of our magazine, he knows Rocky. They've worked together. They worked on a film, an Anthony Mandler movie that's coming out. And so they had a rapport. Rocky and I separately have a rapport. And so there was kind of like a, there was just a lot of familiarity there. So it started with a fitting here at the GQ Style office in New York City. That was actually several weeks before we did the shoot.
Right.
So Rocky came up, Mobolaji had a bunch of stuff for him, and I basically just sat there and watched them cook.
Yeah.
It was awesome. I mean, he tweeted yesterday, like, pure confidence and charisma, which is, like, basically my forward takeaway of what it's like being around ASAP Rocky. It's just like, it's, or as I say in the piece, it's like charisma in its purest form.
Yeah.
Like, I've done a lot of fashion shoots. I've been a lot around celebrities, I guess, you know. It sounds dorky to say that, but it's true.
Yeah.
And he just has, like, the wattage.
It's crazy.
The electricity just flows through him.
Yeah.
And so he came in, and then he's just really into clothes. And then he and Mobolaji already have a vibe.
Yeah.
So they were just, like, trying stuff on, trying different ideas, like, giving each other a lot of shit. Like, Rocky would put something on and Mobolaji would love it and Rocky would hate it and that would get funny. And then finally, and the other incredible thing about ASAP Rocky is that when sometimes he puts on something so simple, you're like, why are we even, like, we're making a magazine here. There's no point in putting on something that's so simple. And then he puts it on and totally brings it to life.
Yeah.
Or they're, like, holding clothes in their hands that are, like, really ridiculous. To my, like, not as trained, I'm not a stylist, let's put it that way. I'm not a true capital F fashion person, maybe. And I'm like, I have no idea where the guys are headed with this. And then, I don't know, when Rocky wears the clothes, it all really starts to make sense.
Yeah.
And I think you see that in the shoot. Sometimes with him, it's like, less is more, and sometimes it's like, more is way more.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a cool... it's a cool subject to work with.
Yeah.
And an awesome challenge for Mobolaji. The other thing is that sometimes we work with people who are like, they come to trust Mobolaji and they're like, yeah, dude, whatever you say, I'm down. And Rocky is, like, very opinionated.
Yeah.
So we did a fitting, and the respectful way to put this would be, on the shoot day, some things changed a bit. So they kind of, like, dug back into it. They didn't start over by any stretch, but they, like, things changed based on the feeling, and then we were on the location, and there was, you know, there's a different vibe in the GQ style fashion closet than there is, like, at an old Abbott's home or wherever we were in London.
Everyone had a few weeks to marinate on the fits that were cooked up, and then just like...
Yeah, so the fits changed.
Some things.
As they should. Yeah. You know, we're open to it.
And then it, just to like zoom out a little bit, like what are the objectives here when you go into a story like this? Like, to me, it seems like you've got a familiar person, right? Because these are famous people. They are familiar. People have ideas about Aziz and Rocky and Brad and all these people. We all have ideas. We have, you know, you say a name and you immediately can picture them in your head. And we think we know them and what they look like and what they're all about. So it seems to me one like objective here is to show them in some sort of new light.
Definitely.
You know, and there's like different ways to do that. But like, how would you describe what the objective is going into a shoot like this with somebody like Rocky?
Yeah. So Mobilaje and I, and, you know, Noah, you're obviously included this. So are Sam and Lily, like the whole team. We talk about like what would be something interesting to do with the subject. And so we kind of like go in with a plan and an intention. And that has like a conceptual component that involves the input of the photographer, that involves the location that we've chosen, all that stuff. But then we also just go in ready to collaborate.
Yeah.
So, you know, one thing that like all the kind of people that we put on the cover of GQ Style are bound to have ideas. Like there are some people who the clothes that they're like, they trust Mobilaje, but they come into the whole experience with like really, both creative ideas and just like, I'm open to this kind of thing. I'm really not open to that kind of thing. And so we have like a fully fleshed out plan, and then we go and we're just like excited to talk through it and work with these people. 'Cause if we didn't respect them as people, as artists, as personalities, like we wouldn't be putting them on the cover of our magazine. So I think, you know, we really go in ready to collaborate and to be open to their ideas. And if somebody's like, you know, because it happens, sometimes somebody will be like, I'll do this picture if you want, or I'll wear these clothes if you want, but I really don't like it. We're not like, yeah, okay, put it on. We're going to take this
photo. You have to do this.
Yeah. It's more like, no, if you don't feel like yourself, then it's not going to be a compelling image.
And we're not dealing with like the sort of vapid industry pawns here. These aren't like,
nah,
to your point, the dudes we're working with, and I think the cover speak them for themselves. Like, we would rather work with dudes that have strong opinions and strong ideas and vision for how they want to present themselves to some extent.
Yeah. And we like go in openly talking about giving them the opportunity to express themselves and being willing. And sometimes it creates difficulty.
Yeah.
But that's that's super worthwhile. That's all part of the process.
If you ever came back from a cover shoot and you're like, yeah, everything went really well and there were no conflicts or arguments or difficulties whatsoever, I would be pretty worried about what the photos were.
You got a guaranteed brick.
This cover was shot by Andrew Dasimu. Yeah. Who's he and what was it like working with him?
Andrew is kind of an OG, an old collaborator of mine in Mobilaje's, and really he's one of Mobilaje's closest collaborators.
Cool.
So they've done a lot of stuff together. From 2003 to 2007, I worked at the Fader magazine. Mobilaje was there at the same time, and Andrew shot a lot. Like almost, you know, he probably had something in most, if not every, issues. So we all know each other well, but especially those two, Mobilaje, our fashion director, and Andrew, the photographer, work together all the time. So they really know each other well. And that was, in a way, it was like, I even said this out loud a few times. I was like, it's cool to have the band back together, but we got to push this someplace different. We're not trying to like remake Magic from 2005. Like nobody wants to see that. It wasn't that magical anyway. That was cool. It was like a familiar squad all trying to push to someplace different.
Yeah. What?
The other thing I'll say is Rocky, and this is in the piece, Rocky was in lockdown in London.
Right.
He basically had his phone shut off. The only person with him was A$AP Nast, FOTP, friend of the pod. Shout out to Nasty Nast.
No doubt.
So he was like, you know, he was very committed to the shoot and excited about it, but he was also trying to get back into the studio to finish his album.
Yeah.
So there were those kind of like guardrails and boxes you have to work in are always interesting.
Rocky,
he was really though in like a music headspace,
yeah,
not in a fashion headspace.
That's cool. I mean, so many of the comments I've seen already are like, "Where's the album?" Which I guess is inevitable.
Yeah.
But like, people want it. And
nice shoot. Where's the album?
But you, you know, you were there. He's doing it. What were you able to?
Yeah, it's happening.
Were you able to gather? What other kind of intel were you able to gather about the album making while you were there? I mean, there's some of it in the story, but were there other just little pieces you picked up on, or
Nothing that's not in the piece, other than to say I heard some little bits and pieces of it on set, and it's a vibe.
Let's go. Going back to the photographer, though, like,
yeah,
this is a lot of magazines, like, historically will align themselves with a photographer to create like an aesthetic that becomes like sort of the legacy for them both, you know?
Yeah.
Like they have these portfolios of like covers they've done together over many, many years. Where are you at with working with photographers and collaborating with them and like building those relationships? Is it about, you know, like what are you looking for, and how do you make those decisions about who to work with and how to work with them?
It's like everything else about magazine making or a lot of creative enterprises. It's like driven number one by a gut feeling, yeah, kind of thing. Our vibe for GQ Style, I think my vibe in general, is wanting to always have a mix of trying new things and trying and working with people we've worked with before,
yeah,
and trying to get something new. So, you know, now that we have a few issues of GQ Style under our belt, each issue has, like, without even trying, some repeat photographers and some new people. And that's what I think it'll always be that way, because yeah, that's like what's fun. That's what like keeps you like creatively free, but also like on the rails.
Yeah.
And when you work with somebody, it's like, oh wow, this like this thing really worked, and we could like take that and make a whole shoot of that. Or while working with that person, an idea came up, and it's not what we ended up applying to the shoot we were doing at the time, but we should like revisit that idea and build a whole shoot around it. The current issue has our first shoot with Jason Nocito, who is a good friend of mine and also like one of my favorite photographers,
yeah,
but it's not somebody, it's almost kind of weird that issue seven is the first shoot with him, and the second shoot with Michael Schmeling, who's also somebody I've known forever, Mark Mahaney. At some point it's going to get boring if I just keep rattling off photographer names.
Wait.
But please cop the new issue of GQ Style, and then we can at me on Twitter. I'd be happy to tell you about any of these photographers.
Yeah, this is, yeah. So one of the most exciting parts of making a magazine, one of the coolest parts of making the magazine, is when we gather in your office and look at the options for the cover photo.
Oh, yeah.
And
There's always a few. Hotly debated.
They're always different. It'll be a different, the fashions will be different, and a pretty often significantly different, like poses, positions, angles,
yeah,
all that. And, you know, we go in with a few, and one comes out and gets sent to the printer.
Definitely.
A part of that I think maybe not a lot of people realize is how hard it can be to get that photo. Get three of them. But
totally.
Like, you think it's just like a portrait with nice light, but there are like other things. Like, what are some of the things you want these images to do? And other than gut feeling, or maybe it's just,
you saw my cop out coming.
Maybe it's pure gut feeling, but like, What is the, like, is there a quality or a way to describe the one that comes out the winner, or like what your expectation is, what you feel it needs to do, what it needs to achieve once it's out there in the world?
Yeah, I would say like GQ Style is a new energy and a different idea and stuff, but at the same time we have the letters GQ on the cover.
Yeah.
And the person needs to be looking their best.
Yeah.
Like it's a fashion magazine. People come to us and trust us with their image, and we are trying to celebrate somebody, and so you want them to just look handsome as hell.
So you're not going to see some art concept or like obscured face or something.
Yeah, not going to do like, oh, wouldn't it be dope if like one of his eyes is half shut and like, yeah, he's like obscure. No, it's like, that's ASAP Rocky. He's a good looking dude. And we're gonna get a photo of him looking handsome.
Yeah,
like people come to us, they trust you with that, and so that is a huge part of it. And then along those lines is recognizability. Like sometimes you have a cool shot, but you're like, that doesn't quite look, Kendrick doesn't like look
yeah,
quite like Kendrick there.
I think that a lot on newsstands too, when I'm like gazing, and I'm like, who is that? Who is that?
Yeah, and there are certain celebrities, like various famous Amys. I can never Amy Adams, Amy. I can never tell which.
Yeah.
I'm like, I think I know which Amy that is.
Yeah.
And so that's another thing. Just you, sometimes you can fall in love with a photo and just be like, that doesn't, you know, or like Conor McGregor, for instance. You know, Conor McGregor, he's like, he's a well-known dude, but at the same time, he's just like kind of breaking into consciousness for some people.
Yeah, yeah.
And you want him looking like Conor McGregor.
Right.
So that's kind of a funny one, but it, we do encounter it quite a bit. And then you just want, I mean, for starters, I'm naming kind of like the basic stuff. You know, you want the clothes to look great.
Yeah.
And then you just, then it gets quickly from that kind of basic stuff, like you want them looking handsome and recognizable and stylish, to then I'm like, this is a new print magazine in the era of the internet killing all print magazines.
Yeah.
So let's do something a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want it to be the most predictable thing ever. And sometimes in those meetings, I've noticed that the squad is often pushing me to not do like the most obvious cover shot.
Yeah.
And but sometimes I still do it anyway.
The thing for me that I've noticed, that the one of the options I always select, and I think I will often push you towards, is I respond most to the attitude, which is a hard thing to describe, but I would say it comes down to often like posture and like body positioning,
yeah,
which is kind of a funny one, but just like the tilt of a head or like
I wish there was a less washed word than this for it, but like swag,
yeah,
question mark,
basically, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's got to have like a little of that to it. And then the other thing I'll say is that Krista Prestek, who's the GQ style, she's the director of visuals,
mm-hmm,
and Fred Woodward, who's the design director, are both, they've been doing this and they know what they're doing, and their input is invaluable. And it really starts with like, first we just have the raw images and we're kind of like, what could be the cover players here? And Fred is always interestingly like putting some in the mix that I never would have thought of as potential covers. And then we'll kind of spend time with those, live with them for a little bit. Sometimes I'll tape them to the wall in my office, and then we'll put logos on them and then live with them that way. Cause you kind of don't know just from a raw picture until you like actually put the GQ style logo on it,
yeah,
like how it works. And so you kind of slowly build it that way. And some are like falling out, and some are kind of like, it's like a little horse race. And then at some point I tape them all to the back of my door and bring
I was just
Noah and
say,
Sam and Mo Balaji and Lily
thing. My favorite thing to do is get called into Will's office, step in, and then the door just closes behind me, and then to turn and see the covers pasted, taped to the door.
Boom, there they are.
There's never any like warning.
It's fun, man. It's got to be fun. And then the other thing that I'm trying to get from you is like a gut reaction, because a cover, it's just like some dude in Hudson News in the airport,
yeah,
like came in to get a smart water,
yeah,
and like a pack of jelly beans, and hopefully you're going to catch his eye.
Yeah, you can't go in there and hem and haw.
Yeah.
And then come back 2 hours later and be like, you know, I changed my mind. It's kind of like you get that one shot to share your gut reaction, and that's the one that's yours.
And it's sort of like, no, tell me what you think right now. And then they'll inevitably be like, well, the thing about this one and the thing about that one. I'm like, no, I don't care. Tell me right now. And then we can, once everybody has like made a declaration, then we can begin to unpack it a little bit.
Yeah.
But you need the first instinct call.
And of course, you mentioned Hudson News, but if my favorite part of making the magazine is, I don't know if it's my favorite part. One of the best parts is that deliberating, looking at the covers and debating that, arguing. I love disagreeing with people about those covers. And then the real test is like 2 weeks later when you're walking through the airport.
Yeah.
And you get that, you see it out in its natural habitat, out in the wild, up against all the others. And that to me is like where I get, it's like, what's my gut reaction then?
Yeah.
That moment is kind of feels like the real test to me.
Definitely.
What do you like, what's your experience with it after the magazine is shipped and gone? Like,
well, one thing that I try to remember, because we printed three Brad Pitt covers.
Yeah.
We took Brad Pitt to three national parks and we printed three. And the one that was my favorite when we sent them off to the printer was not the one that was my favorite once it was out and in the world. And so I just try to remember that, because sometimes like one becomes your favorite in the moment. And so I tried to learn something from that for the issues where we're just choosing one cover.
Yeah.
But the experience is like some, you know, there haven't been, this is going to sound like bullshit, but there hasn't been a GQ style cover where I got sick of it.
Yeah.
Or regret, or just like didn't want to see it anymore. You know, because it does happen sometimes because like, you know, those of us who work here and those covers are in the mix for us. They're on the newsstand for 3 months.
Oh, yeah.
And so you see it a lot of times.
Oh, yeah.
And so you want something that you really love.
We spend a lot of time with them.
Yeah. I really, really like the Rocky cover.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Do you have a, you know, obviously there's real quantifiable ways to measure success. There's sales numbers and traffic numbers and whatnot that will come in. Do you have another success measure? Is it like, you know, like your cousin calls you from Alabama and says he saw it and just blew his mind? Or is there like something that happens where it clicks and you know it worked?
You know, I would probably be better like, better corporate citizen or something like that. If it was all about the numbers for me, or maybe I would be better at this job. I don't know. But for me, it becomes all anecdotal.
Yeah.
It's like you put something out in the world and your friends start texting you and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that becomes what matters most to me.
Yeah.
And just how it feels like a year later when I look back at our 2016 covers, how they feel.
Should we do some vibes now?
Yeah, let's do it. I want to ask you a question, Noah.
This has been really fun interviewing you about making the magazine that I work for.
Yeah,
I encourage everyone to take an hour of your day and interview your boss, grill your boss about what he does. Try it.
Right now, gun to head, what is your favorite GQ style cover so far?
Brad Pitt was the first thing that was going to come out of my mouth.
But which one?
Which cover?
Yeah. There's pink sweater from White Sands. There's the white jacket from the Swamp and Everglades.
The white jacket in the Everglades.
Yeah, that's my favorite of those three now.
I also love Kendrick in the fur coat. I think that one's like iconic.
That one's really, you know, one thing that's interesting about making something like a magazine is, well, you make these images and they completely take on lives of their own online. And the internet coughs that one up a lot.
There's like a lot of Kendrick fan art of that photo, right?
Yeah, and it'll just like appear and, you know, completely out of context, and that's kind of fun to see. Sam, what's your favorite GQ style cover so far? Just the image. Brad Pitt White Sands in the pink sweater.
All right.
That one got a lot of there's sand on his face, and that one got a lot of like Scarface.
It looks like he's been
cocaine
partying.
Jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey.
Let's do some vibes, man.
13 vibes. This is Corporate Lunch, episode 9.
Niner.
13 vibes. I'll go first because...
I got to say it, man. It's like 13 vibes is our not that fast lightning round of things that we're feeling right
now. That's right. Yeah. This is the lightning round that is like a slow-moving lightning.
Kick it off, Brother Johnson.
There's a collection from Levi's called Levi's Vintage Clothing, also known as LVC.
LVC.
We all like Levi's. Everyone likes Levi's, but... maybe a lot of people know about LVC, but LVC is basically like this super specialized little line where they kind of do like historical replicas of, you know, dungarees from 1890 and flannel shirts from the 1960s. And it's kind of all like a mix of American tropes and whatnot. But the stuff is super well made. It ain't cheap, but it's really dope. And I like it every season. And this season, I'm just like really feeling it. I just got a flannel and this like denim triple pleat blousey jacket that I think is like an 1890s replica that I've been wearing. That's amazing. It has a really weird boxy fit. It's like cool historical shit that feels super modern that you can wear now with like whatever your favorite fashion from Mr. Porter is, and it all kind of like jives together.
Yeah, they bring it back with intention.
Yeah,
like it's not an accident that they brought back the jacket you're wearing now.
LVC.
I got LVC on right now too.
Do you do?
Yeah.
See?
Pretty most days I probably have some LVC on.
All right.
I've got it on my legs.
I knew that people were gonna know this one, but I feel like sometimes because it's been around for a while and we do all know it, you just kinda like take it.
Dude, I'm not
granted.
Dissing your vibe, man. That vibe is very strong.
Let's go. Thank you.
I completely agree.
Appreciate that.
Going along with the theme of this episode, I'm gonna my first vibe is the Q&A, as in the question and answer format of doing interviews.
Yeah.
GQ Style leans heavily on the Q&A format, and that's not an accident. I just love reading interviews, and but I also like them outside of magazine form. I just finished Conversations with Mies van der Rohe, which is like it's a book that is a compendium of Mies interviews over the years. I also have like a bit of a collection of the Paris Review Writers at Work series.
Those are great.
And so I'm just like, if, I don't know about you, Noah, but I get hit up a lot by friends who are like, "What should I need a new book? What should I read?"
Yeah.
I mean, those two things are great, but also just like compendiums of interviews, collections of interviews are awesome.
And I mean, like, we could just point out that the Rocky interview from this cover story is pretty fantastic, and also includes like some banter and chatter and ball busting from Ferg and Nast and like the other homies, that the mob that are in the room with him, and it's super entertaining.
And the video is part of the cover story is from the interview itself, so check it out.
You ready for the next vibe?
Let's go.
Gourds.
It's decorative gourd season.
It's decorative gourd season. Yo, but I really appreciate the different shapes and colors and patterns that you get in from those decorative gourds. I just can't
resist. Warty. Are you into the warty joints?
Definitely, super warty and weird, like psychedelic tie dye, streaky color stuff. But there's a bunch of them on my mantle right now. And
hilarious phalluses.
I have no shame in that.
Hilarious phallic gourds.
Yeah, they're all types of bizarre phallic shapes.
Sticking with the Q&A theme, I listened to I really like the long form podcast.
Moving on from gourds.
Yeah, I'm doubling back to my own wave. The long form podcast is a really good podcast. It's like media navel gazing at the highest level. It's really good. Max Linsky does most of the interviews, and Max got Hillary Clinton on the long form pod. And I thought it was really fascinating. It obviously was pegged to her book.
Right.
I'm a little behind the news cycle here, and I really don't care.
Well, I just saw that Kim Kardashian posted her signed copy of Hillary's book on Instagram today.
So I'm in the news cycle.
Yeah, you're right on this.
All right, sweet. Yeah. But I just found, like, I read a bunch of the press around the release of Hillary's book, and that was fine. But this interview, they have a bit of a rapport. They already had a bit of a rapport. And this interview was just really fascinating. And you just can't help but feel what it's like to be a political candidate who took a major L,
yeah,
and a total surprise L. And I just think it doesn't matter what your politics are. That is a really unique historical moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And this woman was just, she's the one who experienced it in a way that nobody else can identify with. So to get in her head a little bit through this podcast, it was really, really interesting.
I don't see myself reading that book anytime soon, just because it's not.
You don't have to. There's the long form podcast.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm gonna do. Since I'm shouting out brands today, the next vibe is the skate brand 917, which maybe people know.
Is that? I don't know.
It's Alex Olson's skate brand. Okay. So he launched a brand called Bianca Shandon a few years ago.
I was about to say, is it a little weirder. Bianca related.
It is. Yeah. It's an offshoot that's more core skate, whereas Bianca's a little bit fashiony.
Ah.
And 917 put out like its first full length video a week or two ago, and it's super good. It's long, but like all the tricks are bangers, and they just have a good every year, couple times a year, a new sort of skate crew emerges that's like the one to watch. Like all the kids are good, and everyone's got good style, and the clips are good, the music's good. You know, it was like Palace and Bronze and Dime and Polar have all been there. And I just feel like now's the moment of 917. It's fantastic. Their best skater, or my favorite, is this kid, Cyrus Bennett, who skates for Nike. And he just put out a part on Nike this week. That's a banger. Plus their gear is fresh. Like all their tees and hats and stuff are like just like graphic tees and whatnot. But it's all dope.
I have a consumption question.
Yeah.
How at this point do you consume a new skate vid?
Today I saw Cyrus's part because I think Nike posted a clip on Instagram and said like Cyrus full part out now, and I clicked through and watched it on YouTube.
So this is his full part from the 917, from a bigger video. And
no,
you
it's
watched
actually
just
a
his
new
part.
It's an additional part. He actually had a part in the 917 video, and then 2 weeks Bonus. Later dropped a Nike part, which is like when you know a skater is on fire.
Right. And so for the 917 video, like you don't take a DVD and put it on your television.
Nope, they just posted it on their website.
And you said how long is it?
It was like 40 minutes.
And did you post up and watch it through, or did you consume it in chunks?
I posted up. I airplayed it. I streamed it from my phone to my TV, to my Apple TV, so yep. I watched it on the big screen in the crib.
So you took in the whole 40 minutes in one sitting.
I did, which is a lot. People don't really do that anymore.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
I'm going with bandanas as headbands.
Okay.
On the weekend. I don't know what's going on follically for our listeners, but the GQ Style Squad has all got some flow happening here. Sam Hine has long hair. Noah Johnson Looks like he lost his barber's phone number. Mobolaji's been growing the beard long.
Yeah.
Lily's got bangs.
Lily's bangs are banging.
But for me, on the weekend, you get a dope bandana and you wear it as a headband.
Yeah.
Your wife may or may not get embarrassed when you go into town for coffee.
I can see that happening.
But I have a couple Capital bandanas.
Love it.
One of them was brought back to me by Noah Johnson from Japan.
That's right.
Capital with a K.
That was nice of me.
I was shredding that one this weekend, and I thought it was great.
I was gonna do Capital as a vibe this week.
Well. It just happened.
I'm not gonna, but now it's in the mix, so look at that.
Check it out, Capital with a K from Japan.
I'm gonna shout out a music thing I've been listening to as vibe number next. Vibe. This is weird because it's an album from 2008. Isn't that funny? Like, I feel like I listen to the newest music, like the new King Krule I'm listening to today, or I listen to music from the 60s or something.
Yeah.
I never listen to music from 9 years ago.
Right. Recent vintage, I call that.
It's totally lost. But it's an album called Everything That Happens Will Happen Today, and it's by David Byrne and Brian Eno.
Awesome.
And it's like, they called it electronic gospel, which isn't quite what it sounds like to me, but it gives you a sense of just like, it's a pop album. It's super good. It sounds a little bit like a Talking Heads album, I think.
Have you put it on in the house, or you've been walking around with it in the headphones?
I put it on in the house real loud. There's a song called Strange Overtones, which is like my favorite. It's just like a great pop song. And I think it's just about writing songs. It's not going to hit you that hard in your emotional zones, but it's just a great catchy tune.
I'm going to check it out.
Yep.
I'm going to drop Anne Brand.
Anne Brand.
Cactus Plant Flea Market.
Good one.
Yeah. Do you have any cactus plant?
No, I don't, but I wish I could have some. I don't know. It's too hard to get, I think.
It's not easy to get.
We need Mark Anthony Green to flow it.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Towards my zone.
I've tried that. It doesn't go so well. Cactus plant is, you see Pharrell wearing it. Cynthia Liu, who's the designer, is Pharrell associated, so he gets first dibs. Mark Anthony Green apparently gets second dibs. I bought mine on the internet, but it did come to my house with my name sewn into the collar.
What?
Yeah, stitched in.
You bought it on the internet?
Yeah. Oh,
man.
But so anyway, Cactus Plant Flea Market, they have it at that you can buy it from the Cactus Plant website if you act fast when there's a drop, which I did.
So they're like sudden, unannounced drops?
Yeah, it just happens. You got to grab it.
Like, we got tees now.
Yeah, go. That's not usually, you know, I'm not usually quick on the trigger like that, but I made it happen.
Your timing was right.
And she just has a really unique point of view, which is what we're all looking for in any brand, no matter what the genre.
She happens to
make tees and cool bracelets and stuff.
I'm getting in on that next drop.
All right. I better hurry up and wear my shit then.
The next vibe was planned out before I got called out for losing my barber's hair phone number, which I did do. I haven't had a haircut in a very long time.
Since the David Byrne and Brian Eno album came out. Recent vintage hair.
Sometime like mid to early summer. It doesn't look great, and I don't see that changing anytime soon, but I'm also not going to get it cut anytime soon. My vibe is not my hair. My vibe is before not getting my hair cut, I was getting my hair cut like twice a month.
Yeah.
Like regularly, constantly, obsessively. I would feel around behind my ears to see if there were any like long stragglers and go get the fade freshened up.
Yeah.
My vibe is to take your most sacred ritual and just do without it for a while.
Wow. See what happens.
Yeah. I think we said kill your idols.
Thoughtful experiments in living.
Just like there's one thing that you probably do every day that you feel like is so essential to who you are. For me, it was a fresh haircut, which I have abandoned, and I'm feeling pretty great. Like I said,
let that go and see what else goes with it.
Exactly.
Amazing.
There we go.
Dude, life thoughts, man. It's like wherever you dependably go for corporate lunch.
I mean, this is episode 9 of Corporate Lunch, and we're just two guys. And well, there's three of us, two on the mic, and Sam Hine is in the building. And we're just doing the best we can. That's all we can do.
Yeah. Opening up our mind space.
Yep.
Noah advises taking your dearest ritual and not doing it.
Yeah.
My thing recently has just been like, sometimes I get that procrastination-y feeling. It's just like that little micro brainwave of dread where you're just like, I do not feel like doing that today.
Yeah.
And just handle it right then.
That's the best
whatever
way to
the thing, just handle it right then. I don't know. Could be life-changing. It has been for me.
That's like you get that email and then it hits your inbox and you look at it and you're like, oh no. That's when you know, when you make that sound.
Yeah.
I think that's when you know to handle it immediately.
Handle it immediately. Because otherwise it's like the dark cloud for 2 days. I mean, it could be like, it could be related to the dishes at home.
Yeah, something minor.
It could be related to a phone call at work. It could be related to like having to have a not that pleasant discussion with a colleague. I don't know what it could be.
It's probably a piece of paper you have to sign and scan and send back to someone.
Exactly. It's coming in email and they've said, can I have your signature? And you're like, what?
Yeah.
Anyway.
But the feeling of accomplishment when you do that thing right then in that moment that took you 3 minutes that you didn't want to do is just... it's hard to surpass.
Yeah, and the freedom.
It's as though you have conquered the world.
The key to me has been the words, handle it.
Yep.
And when I get that feeling, the words come into my head and off I go.
There we go.
Growing up, man, it's awesome. Getting older.
I'm gonna polish off these 13 vibes with the 13th vibe. And this wouldn't be an episode of Corporate Lunch if I didn't get to talk about comfort footwear at least a little
bit. That's true. Hopefully far flung.
It's been pointed out to me that maybe a vibe was repeated once in the past related to comfort footwear. I have no comment on that.
Sam, hit no with the slime. We still haven't slimed him for that.
Look, I just got turned on to these things called UFOs. This is so crazy. They're these.
As long as you don't say Mephistos, I'm good.
Nope. They're called UFOs. I think I have no idea how to pronounce it. I've never heard anyone say it, but they are what you call recovery shoes.
Ooh.
So they're like foamy clogs. I thought they were going to be like my new fashion statement for walking around Greenpoint, plant shopping in Greenpoint, but they're not. They're really soft and really weird. I think they're what like long distance runners will wear after like doing a 100-mile ultra marathon. They beat the shit out of their feet and they need these like, they're weirdly supportive and also weirdly soft.
They kind of swaddle the foot.
They're super strange, but I've been wearing them around the house nonstop. They're like $45 on Zappos.com. I'm so in love with these shoes.
Let me get the name one more time.
UFOs. O-O-F-O-S.
UFOs.
This is not like...
it sounds like a Google offshoot. I actually work for the top... I don't work for Google proper. I work for the top secret Google subdivision known as UFOs.
UFOs. That develops comfort footwear.
Yeah.
These are not going to replace my Crocs as my like go-to going out kicks, but...
they're in the mix.
It's a very interesting addition to the comfort shoe mix.
All right, guys, you heard it here. Those are 13 of 13 vibes. I'm Will Welch. That's Noah Johnson. Defend base God at all costs. Defend the base God at all costs.
From PRX.